Welcome to What's the Law podcast by the team at Jackson's Law Firm. Jackson's is a full-service law firm based in the northeast of England working for businesses and private individuals. We're here to chat about what's the law and how it affects various stages in your life. In this episode, we'll be looking at some of the challenges currently facing farmers and the importance of succession planning. Solicitors from Jackson's Law Firm will be joined by Paul Toppin from Baldwins for the discussion and to provide some advice and guidance. Please note that due to the coronavirus pandemic, we are recording this episode of What's the Law remotely, so please be aware that the audio may not be the usual quality. Also bear in mind that we recorded the podcast on the afternoon of the 25th of June 2020.
My name's Emily Robertson. I'm a wills, trusts and probate solicitor at Jackson's Law Firm.
Paul Toppin, partner and Northeast Head of Agriculture at Baldwins Accountants.
I'm Nicola Nielsen, partner and Head of Agricultural Property at Jackson's Law Firm.
Hi, I'm Matthew Rowlandson. I'm an employment solicitor at Jackson's Law Firm. Farming is often faced with challenges. Currently, there are concerns about what the UK's trade relationships will look like after the EU transition period ends on the 31st of December. As well as the challenges presented by COVID-19. At any given time, there will be challenges, whether it be flooding, drought, or a shortage of workers. With all of this uncertainty, what can farm businesses, and in particular, farming families, do to plan for the future?
In my opinion, succession planning has never been more important. You'll often hear advisors saying it's never too early to start planning. Not surprisingly, the main driver for succession planning is usually tax and managing any exposure to inheritance tax. However, in particular for a family-run farm, where assets won't necessarily be left equally between the children, there's many other concerns to think about. In the absence of any succession plan, this can often give rise to potential disputes between surviving family members, which can be costly and difficult to resolve. The grieving process is hard enough to deal with without having to deal with disputes as well. We're also finding clients who are becoming increasingly concerned about future health problems and what might happen if they need to go into a care home, for example. Also, Matthew mentioned COVID-19 and what the future might look like going forward. There's a lot of talk about changes to the inheritance tax regime and what that might mean for agricultural property relief and business property relief going forward. There's a feeling that someone's going to have to pay for the furlough scheme, etc., and inheritance tax is probably an easy target.
The most important thing to remember is just make a start. The problem with succession planning is that quite often it is a difficult topic and nobody really knows how to take those first steps. At the recent Cereals Live event, a poll was taken during their succession planning webinar, and the question was simply, what do you consider is the most challenging aspect of succession in your situation? And the key thing there is they were asking the farmers about their specific circumstances, not necessarily what they think is the biggest challenge generally. You probably won't be surprised to know that the overwhelming response was family conversations was the biggest challenge, and almost 59% of those responding actually gave that as their answer. The next most popular response was that people were uncertain of the advice that was required. And this is probably the easier of the two points to deal with at this stage. The key thing is involve as many of your advisors as you can. Certainly, you want to be talking to your accountant, and I'm sure Paul will echo that. They'll be familiar with the farming business. They'll have regular contact with the business and the family, as they'll probably prepare the annual accounts. And you'll be in contact at various other times during the year as well. They'll be able to advise as to the likely tax consequences of any potential changes that you might wish to consider. You'll also need to involve your solicitor in the planning process, and that may well mean that you have to involve more than one person within the law firm. You'll probably need advice about wills and estate planning, most certainly be property matters that need to be discussed, as well as partnership arrangements. You might even require advice about company structures, if you've already got a company perhaps, or if you're thinking of setting up a new one. You should also consider involving your land agent. It's highly likely that part of the planning process will involve the need for assets to be valued. Even if that's not on a formal basis, then you'll certainly need some kind of informal indication to start with. The key thing is just make sure that your professional advisors are involved at an early stage and that they're each in contact with each other. And that really is important. The advice of one of the advisors may well have an impact upon the advice being given by another. So it's key that everybody's involved in speaking to each other very early in the whole process. It might well be that some of the properties that we're talking about in the planning process are subject to a mortgage, in which case then you'll need also to speak to your bank. It's best to approach them at an early stage about any potential changes so that they can get involved in the process too. It's all well and good, all of the other advisors giving you advice as to how to progress things, but you suddenly make a decision and find that you haven't got the backing of the bank. It's highly unlikely that, therefore, that what you've chosen will be a feasible option. Suppose now we know whose advice you need, we just need to look again at those family conversations. It's often the case that the older generation don't really know how to raise the subject, often a number of children and even grandchildren to take into consideration. Some of those might be involved in the farming business and some might not. The younger members of the family might wish to have the conversations, but they're not entirely sure how they can go about doing that. And there might be many reasons for that. Perhaps they've tried previously and the older generation have simply refused to talk about it. Perhaps they don't know how their non-farming siblings might react. Will those siblings think that they're trying to take family assets away from them? It could just be that they're not very confident as an individual and they just don't really know how to start that conversation. It could well be that the professional advisors can help to bring everybody together for those conversations. Perhaps suggest a round table meeting if the family aren't able to get themselves together to discuss things. Perhaps this is something that your accountant could think about raising. If you have your end of year meeting about the accounts, could be a good time just to raise it at that point. There are likely to be plenty of opportunities where this can be raised. So if the family don't feel confident about raising it directly, have a look and see if you can get your professional advisor on board. They may well be able to get that conversation started for you.
In this segment of the podcast, we're going to use a scenario of a fictional farm to explain some of the financial and legal impacts in various events in the life of a farm. Brian and Isabel Jones own Home Farm, which comprises 400 acres, a farmhouse and a farm cottage. Brian is 63 and Isabel is 61. Brian and Isabel are in a partnership. In addition, they occupy 200 acres from the local estate on a farm business tenancy, which has 8 years left to run. Brian and Isabel have a son and a daughter. Their son Doug is 35 and lives in the farm cottage with his wife and small child. Doug has worked on the farm since he left college. He received a small salary from the business. Their daughter Alison is a teacher at a local primary school and has no interest in the family business. Alison is 33. Brian and Isabel run their business well. They mainly farm sheep, but Isabel started an egg business from one of the farm buildings, which is in its early stages, but is turning a small profit. Isabel also offers bed and breakfast from the farmhouse. Brian and Isabel both have modest pensions and have savings in the region of £80,000. Home Farm is subject to a small mortgage, of which approximately £50,000 remains outstanding.
As Nicola has discussed, putting in place effective succession planning for a farming family really does take a village. Usually at the centre of farming succession planning is a wills and probate solicitor. The best place to start with the farming scenario for this podcast is the usual doom and gloom, which wills and probate solicitors like myself relish in, by looking at what would happen if Brian and Isabel were to die tomorrow. If we start from the basis that absolutely no documents were put in place when Brian and Isabel died, whilst we're all very sorry for their loss, it gives us a great starting point to demonstrate why it is vital to put a will in place. If you do not have a will in place, your estate will be dealt with a system called the intestacy rules. The intestacy rules are outdated and tend to leave all involved unsatisfied with the result, and it is very rare that they actually reflect the wishes of the deceased. In the case of Brian and Isabel, let's say Brian had died, leaving Isabel. The intestacy rules would state that Isabel would receive the first £270,000 of the assets, and the remaining assets would be split 50% between Isabel and the other 50% between Doug and Alison. I should note that this can vary depending on the way that Brian and Isabel hold the property due to a system called the right of survivorship. However, for the purposes of this podcast, we will assume they own 50% of the farm in their own right. Given the assets we are talking about, it's very likely that Brian's estate would be in excess of that £270,000 figure. So Alison and Doug would inherit on Brian's death. It is very rare that a couple would want their children to inherit on the first death. Usually, they would like their children to inherit once they have both passed away. Further, this can cause real difficulties for inheritance tax purposes. A spouse is an exempt beneficiary, meaning if you leave your assets to your spouse, there is no inheritance tax to pay. However, your children are not exempt beneficiaries, so inheritance tax may well be payable on Brian and Isabel's deaths due to Alison's and Doug's inheritance. This can all be avoided by putting a will in place, which gives you the option to leave the entire farm to Isabel. However, a simple will leaving everything to each other and then 50-50 between the children is unlikely to be the best option for Isabel and Brian. As Matthew pointed out, Alison is not interested in the farming business and would have no interest in keeping it on. My experience with farming clients tells me that one of the most important things to farming clients is the continuation of the farming business and ensuring it stays in the family. It is very common for parents in a farming family to want to keep their children as equal as possible whilst ensuring the continuation of the business. There are a number of options available to Brian and Isabel. They could firstly attempt to make Alison as equal as possible by leaving her the monetary assets such as cash, pensions, and could even take a life policy out in her favour. Alternatively, they could give her some of the land, but grant Doug an option to purchase that land, so that before the land left the family, Doug would at least have the offer to buy it. Finally, they could grant a charge, which is similar to a mortgage, to Alison, over the land, meaning Doug would have to pay her out in cash before he sold any land, or after a certain number of years. Whilst each of these options are viable, they do have their own respective tax consequences. Especially with Alison not intending to continue the farming business, it would be unlikely that she'd be able to get agricultural property relief herself on her estate, but these sorts of things will be discussed in more detail later in the podcast. Therefore, my recommendation to Brian and Isabel would be to put their estate into a discretionary trust in their will. This means that the decision for where the assets are to go is delayed and all tax consequences are taken into account. For example, if on Brian's death Isabel is carrying on the farm, it may be sensible to appoint some of the assets to her. Whereas if she's retired, an agricultural property relief would not be available. This might not be the best option. Doug may decide he wishes to remain on the family farm, so on the death of Brian and Isabel, it may be sensible to provide Doug with the current partnership assets. However, if Doug's, for example, left the family farm to set up a loan, this would not be the best option. Further, tax reliefs can be taken into account at the death of each individual and as time goes on. For example, you could appoint the farmhouse out of the trust to Alison and Doug to take advantage of the residence nil rate band, which once again will be discussed in more detail later. The underlying backbone to this advice is flexibility. By obtaining a discretionary trust will, Brian and Isabel allow for tax laws and reliefs to change as they often do, and to allow for changes in their own and their children's lives and their abilities to run that business.
As Emily mentioned, putting a will in place would be advisable and should be the starting point for any inheritance tax planning. If we first look at the inheritance tax release available to Brian and Isabel, each individual for inheritance tax has a nil rate band of £325,000, meaning there's no inheritance tax on their first £325,000 of their estate. In addition, they would each have a residence nil rate band of £175,000. Although this does reduce at a rate of £1 for every £2 where the estate is over £2 million. This means a combined £1 million nil rate band that would pass on death of the first spouse if unused. Other reliefs available would be agricultural property relief. This would allow farm buildings, land and the farmhouse to potentially pass free of inheritance tax. Although agricultural property relief only applies to their agricultural value and not open market value. So with the farmhouse in particular, they may only get agricultural property relief on the agricultural value of the house, but the open market value element may qualify for business property relief. Also, the proportion of the farmhouse used in the bed and breakfast won't qualify for agricultural property relief either. However, it may qualify for business property relief. So in terms of planning, what could Brian and Isabel do? First, they could look to bring Doug into the farming business as a partner. Advantages of this would be some of the value from the farm would be passed to Doug now. Income could go to Doug rather than to the parents. Bringing potential income tax advantages now, as we would have the use of another personal allowance, another basic rate band, and potential advantages for farmers averaging relief. Also, from a commercial point of view, if Doug was brought in with more than 50% of the partnership profit share, they may be able to claim a young farmer's uplift in any basic farm payment subsidy they receive. If we coincide this with a transfer of land in the farm to Doug, any transfer of the land would be a disposal for capital gains tax purposes. We may be able to manage any potential capital gains tax by using holdover relief. This will allow assets to be passed free of any capital gains tax, although it does mean that the asset would pass at a lower base value than market value. We could also do this as, if we did this as part of a retirement plan and Brian and Isabel reduce their partnership share, we could potentially claim entrepreneur's relief to reduce any capital gains tax to 10%. Emily also mentioned a discretionary trust may be useful for tax planning. Brian and Isabel could use this to transfer assets in a flexible and tax-efficient manner. Holdover relief would be available provided Brian and Isabel cannot benefit from the trust itself. This would mean there'd be no capital gains tax arising on the transfer of assets into the trust. There is an inheritance tax charge for transfers into the trust in excess of the nil rate band of $325,000, or combined in this case of $650,000. However, we can deduct business property relief and agricultural property relief in arising at this value. Transfers into the trust do set a 7-year clock ticking for inheritance tax purposes, meaning if Brian and Isabel were to die within 7 years of making the gift, the assets would come back into the estate. So we need to take care when looking at using a trust if there's any health problems now with Brian and Isabel, as if they were to die within 7 years of making the gift via the trust, any business property relief or agricultural property relief would fall away, therefore giving rise to a potentially higher inheritance tax bill. Trusts are also useful for asset protection, where Brian and Isabel want to retain some control of the asset rather than making outright gifts. This can be particularly useful to offer protection in circumstances of divorce or financial difficulties of the beneficiary. Trusts do have a separate inheritance tax regime. There is a 10-year tax charge on the trust. It's best to think of this as 6% every 10 years as opposed to 40% every generation. For income tax purposes, a discretionary trust is taxed at the highest rates of income tax. It's taxed at 45%. However, beneficiaries can claim tax back on their tax returns. So if they are basic rate taxpayers, this could give rise to a potential income tax refund. Trusts are particularly useful for maintenance of grandchildren who can also reclaim tax paid by the trustees. Final point to consider for trusts is there is some administrative burden. They have to be registered with the Trust Registration Service, and trust tax returns need to be prepared on an annual basis.
This is a perfect demonstration of why having all of your advisors involved is very important. For Brian and Isabel, their trust could be set up on death, as I've suggested, or have the option to set up a discretionary trust in their lifetime, as Paul's described. In reality, for the purposes of this podcast, it would entirely depend on the value of Brian and Isabel's estate. However, in the hope of not overcomplicating matters and getting a bit too technical, we've tried to give you all of the possible scenarios that might be best for you and your farm.
It's really important to understand at an early stage what property the family owns and how they hold it. And by that, what I mean is, who are the ultimate owners of each property? Often a farm will be made up of many different legal titles, and it's often the case that the main holding is added to over the years as the business expands and as more land becomes available. This can result in a patchwork of titles, and they may not all be owned by the same parties. Emily assumed that Brian and Isabel own the property equally. However, we always need to check. Just because the deeds refer to Brian and Isabel being the owners doesn't necessarily mean that it is just owned by them. It could be that there's a declaration of trust in place, which indicates that the property is held for themselves and others, or it might even be held as an asset of the partnership rather than a personal asset. If that is the case, bringing in a new partner would affect their percentage ownership of the property. It isn't uncommon for the property to be registered to the old generation, but for it to be shown in the business accounts as being an asset of the partnership. So it's important to look at all of the documentation together rather than just relying on the title documents themselves. As Paul mentioned, there might be good reason to transfer property ownerships as part of the planning exercise. However, there are a few issues that we need to consider before we commit to any transfers. For instance, will there be any liability to pay stamp duty land tax, or SDLT as it's often referred to, as a result of the transfer of the property? Depending on the circumstances, there might not be, but it is advisable to check at an early stage. This will particularly be the case where the transfer is taking place in return for payment of money in the other direction, or where the property is subject to a mortgage and the property is being transferred subject to that mortgage. The person who is to become a new owner of the property will be assuming liability for part of the outstanding debt, and stamp duty land tax may be payable on that amount, even though no money is actually changing hands. There could be exemptions which apply so that there is no SDLT liability, but each case would need to be looked at based on its own facts. The benefits of transferring the property may be outweighed by the stamp duty land tax costs, depending on the circumstances. In our scenario, it isn't clear how the property is held. We have assumed that it's personally owned. If the property was being transferred with the small outstanding mortgage still in place, then we'd have to look at the value of that mortgage to work out whether there was any stamp duty land tax payable. In this particular scenario, it's a very small amount, and so SDLT liability is unlikely to be an issue. We'd also need to look at what could be done due to the fact that the property is subject to mortgage. Will the bank require a new charge to be taken, or will they be happy for the property to be transferred subject to the existing charge? It's unlikely to affect the final decision of the family in this instance, but if the bank requires a new charge to be taken, then there will be additional costs associated with that. It might be that the bank's policy requires new searches to be undertaken, and that will also be an additional expense. We need to also give a little bit of thought to any land that's tenanted. In our scenario, we've got a farm business tenancy of 200 acres, and that actually equates to about a third of the land which is currently being farmed. 8 years, in terms of family planning, is not particularly long time, and by the time all of the family discussions have taken place, the remaining term may well only be 3 or 4 years. And what will happen at the end of the term? There's always the possibility that the tenancy will become a statutory periodic tenancy, and that means that it will just continue to run from year to year until either party serves notice to terminate it. But what would the family's position be if the landlord did decide to terminate that tenancy? What impact would that have on the farming business, and would it change some of the decisions that the family are currently looking to make?
The seem to be a lot of things to consider. Where should any farming family start?
Planning for your own death isn't easy. We would advise the family have discussions as early as possible about the future plans for succession, as this will help with decision making. The most important message is don't put it off. Dealing with this now might not be easy, and good advice will come at a cost. However, it will save a lot of pain in the future. Resolving disputes is difficult enough without adding the grieving process. Speak to your advisors and use advisors who will work together to form a joined-up approach, as this will also save considerable time and costs.
As professionals working in the agricultural sector, we understand that these decisions are not always easy, and reaching any decision may take many years of consideration and discussion. Even if a decision can't be reached at this point in time, it is still worth reviewing your current situation. Do you have all of your ducks in a row, as it were? Do you have the appropriate documentation in place for your current circumstances? Here at Jackson's, we offer what we call the Farm Resilience Plan. It's a free initial review of your property, business and family interests in order to assess whether there is anything that the farming family could be considering in order to better protect their position now. For example, there might be title issues in respect to the property. And if there is going to be a transfer at some point, this will need to be sorted out. So why not deal with it now to make any transfer in the future simpler? Is there a partnership agreement in place? The family is considering bringing somebody into the partnership. On what terms would that be? It's a sort of legal health check, if you will, for the farming family and business. We're working with the NFU on this initiative, and they're able to offer financial assistance to members who sign up to their legal assistance scheme, so it is worth looking into. To round up, as Paul said, don't put off the planning. But if you can't decide what to do right now, it is still possible to put your house in order. These things should be subject to constant review, so anything which is done now can always be changed in the future once a decision has been made as to the bigger picture.
So if you can take anything away from this podcast, it's don't wait. You are better to call your solicitor, accountant, land agent, or whomever you require advice from for a chat, because you never know what's around the corner. Ensure the safety of your farm's future by putting in place succession planning as soon as possible. And we hope we have given you the basis of information to do so.
Thank you for listening to What's the Law podcast by the team from Jackson's Law Firm. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review on your favourite podcasting app. Share this podcast. Find us on social media and use the hashtag WhatsTheLawPod. You can also visit our website, jacksons-law.com, to find out more. We look forward to you joining us for another episode of What's the Law in the future.